This is episode 344, dated Friday, January 26th, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. This is episode 344, dated Friday, January 26th, 2024. With us, as always, Peter O'Toole from Coos Bay, Oregon, enjoying rain, I think, Peter, again. It's raining where you are?
Yeah, it's raining, windy, duck weather. So,
we've had a lot of that this winter so far.
We have, but that's typical weather for us. So it's just, you just power through it. Anyway, otherwise, doing great.
We have duck weather too. Most of the week, it's been rainy and dreary and cloudy at 40 to 50 degrees. It's just unbelievable. Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. Our media sources, thank you for airing us. Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place Chatline, thank you for posting our programs. Also, Jacqueline Sylvia, our web designer. She archives our shows on my website. That is www.brancoevents.com. Just go there, arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts, click on those, and select the show that you want to hear. They're mostly there.
Merci, Jackie.
I also want to thank Trish for being our host for today, and Brad for mainstreaming us on ACB Media 5. And for that reason, and for other reasons, we have listeners who are not on my direct mailing list, so you are going to likely need our email address if you want to write to us at In Perspective. So please feel free. Tell us what you think of the program in general, specifically this one, by writing to BobBranco93. That's BobBranco93@gmail.com. That's all one word. BobBranco93@gmail.com. Back for a second visit here on In Perspective. We will be happy to show you again Morgan White Jr. Morgan White Jr. was on a while ago talking about game shows and trivia. Many of you in the New England area are familiar with Morgan White Jr. He is a frequent visitor to WBZ Radio in Boston, and I had the pleasure of meeting Morgan once at a picnic at Lars Anderson Park
two years ago.
Brookline, Massachusetts. And it was a pleasure, Morgan, to meet you that day. How are you?
I'm fine. Nice to see you again. Nice
thank
shirt.
Thank you for agreeing to come back on In Perspective once again.
And may I say something about game shows?
Please.
On February 17th, I do a show, as you mentioned, on WBZ every Saturday night, 10 to midnight. I will be joined by Roger Dobkowitz, who for 30 years was the producer of The Price is Right with Bob Barker and folding into Drew Carey. And he began his career working for Mark Goodson and Bill Todman. So I will have him on. And he and I will be speaking about the history of Mark Goodson and Bill Todman on February 17th, WBZ Radio at 10 p.m.
I remember Goodson and Todman. They produced a lot of game shows.
A lot of game shows. And a couple of westerns. They produced Johnny Yuma, The Rebel. And they produced Branded with Chuck Connors.
I remember that show.
Yes. You'll be joining me. Yes, Peter.
I want to turn a corner. We might come back to game shows down the road, but I want Morgan. I know Morgan because he's interviewed me twice on WBZ about my thing about Common Ground and books and elephants and all that good stuff. And
yeah.
You're
on 2 months ago with me.
That's right. And we can have the chance to do it again, but that's a different conversation for another show. So I'm sort of curious, Morgan, you obviously have another life besides game shows, and I'd be sort of curious to know, you know, sort of about your, the other work that you do, you know, besides the game show stuff.
Well, we are doing this on a Zoom, And for those of you who can see me, I wear a necklace that says Trivia. I've been wearing this necklace since 1980 when I had it made. I've been doing Trivia, obviously, since then. I do Trivia once a week at a club in Dedham, Mass, called Midway Restaurant. And periodically, I do Trivia live in various venues. People that have hired me, ironically, I was hired by a gentleman, Elliot, back in the mid-90s to do Trivia in Toronto, Canada, at a convention. And he hired me again just about 3 or 4 months ago to do Trivia for him at a country club. So people from time to time use me, try to track me down and use me again so I can entertain for their functions. And I do Trivia on every subject. Peter, give me a letter. Say any letter.
W.
Bob, say any letter.
U.
Here we go. No, W. U. What am I going to do with you? Okay. I'm going to give you somebody who you should know. Now, this is me being mean, but you guys pick the letters. There was a cartoon called Hoppity Hooper put out by Jay Ward, the people that put out Rocky and Bullwinkle and George of the Jungle, etc. And there were three characters. There was Fillmore Bear, Hoppity Hooper, and a wolf-like character, a friendly wolf. And what did Hoppity call him? None of you will know this, but it's my job to use the letters that you give me. And I have done so. And you can see I'm not looking anything up. The answer is Uncle Waldo, U-W. That quick, that fast, right in front of you.
Actually, I said Q, not U, but that's okay.
Oh, you said Q.
Q.
You said U.
No. That's all right.
I thought you said U too, Bob, for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, it did sound like U.
Okay, so am I doing W-Q or Q-W?
Don't matter.
Okay. Why'd you let me go through all that without stopping me?
Because I wasn't sure what the punchline was going to be yet. Now I know where you're headed with, so.
Now you know where I'm headed. Okay. Here we go. The old TV show, Ensign O'Toole with Dean Jones. J.C. Flippin was on that show as well. What was the name of the bosun's mate?
I have absolutely no clue.
Neither
Waldo,
do I.
Waldo Queen.
Okay.
Now, see, again, I'm doing this off the top of my head, no looking it up, and that's my job. And I do it well. And if you pick Sharon, is it?
Sharon.
Pick any TV show ever that you know well that you watch.
Sharon. Can you admit yourself?
I think Sharon left a meeting.
Oh.
Let me check.
Okay.
I'll volunteer, Morgan.
All right, go ahead.
All in the Family.
All in the Family. Easiest All in the Family question, what was their address?
7.
You're off to a good start.
7-something-4 Hauser Street.
Put a zero in the middle and you
704,
nailed
it. 704 Hauser Street.
704 Hauser Street.
In Queens, New York.
Very good.
Those were the days.
And what was the name of the end theme, which was a piano instrumental?
Oh, you mean the one that went do-do-do-do-do, do-do-do?
Yeah.
Do-do-do. I never knew the name of it.
Do-do-do-do-do. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
I never knew the name of it.
Say it again.
I never knew the name of that.
Remembering You.
Okay.
All in the Family. And I've learned over the years, if I'm in a room full of people, say there are 40, 50 people, there'll be some that are towards the higher age bracket. There'll be some that are in the lower age bracket. And of course, people in the middle. I've got to know about 2.5 Men or Mom or current TV shows, as well as I have to know about All in the Family, or The Lone Ranger or Star Trek. That's my job, and I'm proud that I do it well.
Two and a Half Men and Mom have been featured on TV Land for most of the past 6 or 7 years.
And
or at least Two and a Half Men has.
And it's funny because there are legendary producers like Norman Lear for All in the Family. Chuck Lorre is the producer of Two and a Half Men, Mom, Big Bang Theory, Will and Grace, and others. So Chuck Lorre has become the Norman Lear of the 21st century.
So talk about Norman Lear. He passed, obviously. What does his legacy look like to?
They'll be showing all of these programs, On the Family, Maude, The Jeffersons, 100 years from now. His legacy is cemented. We will be enjoying these shows in the year 2425. That's just the way TV works. We'll be enjoying Lucy. We'll be enjoying Star Trek. We'll be enjoying, pick your TV show. If it ran for a good 4, 5, 6 seasons or more, it is forever going to be in our TV screens, in our living rooms, on our computers, on our wristwatches.
I have a trivia question.
How about the Honeymooners? How will they fit in?
Hang on, Paul. We're going to get to our participants shortly.
Okay.
We can talk about the Honeymooners, but before we do that, Morgan, on the subject of All in the Family, the Jeffersons and Maude and Norman Lear, yeah. I got a trivia question for you. Can you name the spinoff of Maude?
The spinoff of Maude was the Jeffersons. The spinoff of Maude was Good Times
because of Florida, the maid.
Who was
That's right.
the maid? They spun her off onto her own show, and that show, Good Times, they lived in a Chicago tenement, a Chicago project, so to speak. So James, the daughter Thelma, the two sons, JJ and Michael, all lived in a Chicago project.
Did Norman Lear produce that program also?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
And John Amos, who played the father, constantly was disagreeing with Norman Lear and the writers because he felt the character of JJ was just the wrong image for Black America in the early 70s. True story.
Now, Paul mentioned the Honeymooners. I think he had a question about... Paul, I'll let you ask the question because I don't remember the entire question, and Morgan might have the answer to what you want to know.
I was just wondering his opinion, how they fit in, like long-term and with some of the classics, whether they're going to be lasting as well.
Yes. I don't understand why, because that show ran for one season, 39 episodes, but it was on Jackie Gleason's variety show, Saturday nights. They would do skits of the Honeymooners.
There were 39 episodes, but weren't there additional episodes as well? Because I remember, because I have the CD set, the DVD set, 39.
Yes.
But I remember when there was a marathon of the Honeymooners on TV Land back in the early 2000s. There were a lot of episodes that were not on the DVD collection.
They were from the Jackie Gleason variety show, which was on Saturday nights. And they did skits. They didn't run a full half hour. They ran only maybe 12, 15 minutes of the Honeymooners because you still had Jackie Gleason, Art Carney, and Audrey Meadows. They had Joyce Randolph, who replaced Pert Kelton, who was Trixie Ed Norton's wife.
And she recently passed away too.
Yes, she did.
The last surviving Honeymooner, 99 years of age.
Yep, that is true.
We'll go back to Norman Lear because I found...
Fine.
I'm just curious what you talked about rightfully that his shows are you know, will live forever. And what made him so iconic? What made him so unique?
First of all, he tried to make his shows much more real in the concept. Now, Sammy Davis Jr. isn't showing up at everybody's house due to comedic circumstances, but the majority of the shows of All in the Family were much more real Americana versus the sitcoms of that era, Dick Van Dyke, Leave It to Beaver, Ozzie and Harriet. Those shows didn't deal with anything controversial. They avoided controversy like the plague. All in the Family and Maude and the Jeffersons and Good Times went headlong into controversial subjects.
I wonder how that would go over today with today's woke culture.
For an example, we were just talking about Chuck Lorre. His sitcoms do that in their own way. They deal with subject matter that's 21st century subject matter, and they do them in a comedic way. You've got a brother who's mooching off another brother who lives in a wonderful home on Malibu Beach, and the brother who's the mooch doesn't have any money. He's a chiropractor, but he doesn't make a lot of money like his, as in Charlie Sheen, who plays the brother that writes themes to commercials for a living.
And Charlie Harper.
Charlie Harper. And Alan Harper, played by John Cryer, is the sad sack of a brother whose wife kicked him out of his own house. His son, at that time, 10, 11-year-old Jake Harper, is just not the best bulb when it comes to being a student in third, fourth, fifth grade. And the key with those shows, when you add a child in those shows, if the show's popular, the kid keeps getting older. So the jokes about him being 10, 11 years old and not bright in school kind of weakened when he's now 17, 18 and not bright in school. What are you going to do? They outlived their successfulness. And that was, I think, one of the reasons why Charlie Sheen rebelled from doing a ninth season. But they wrote him out in a kind of creative way. They brought in Ashton Kutcher as a billionaire, Walden Schmidt, and they milked another 4 years out of that show. Two and a Half Men ran for 12 years, 12 seasons. Go figure.
Getting back to Norman Lear and Bob's comment about woke culture, I think you could make the case that Norman Lear laid the groundwork for some of this woke culture stuff. I mean, he had a political point of view that was a little different from your average person from Queens at the time. And I think he made it possible for people to talk about controversial topics in ways that didn't happen.
Yes, he did. As in the war in Vietnam.
Yep.
Abortions. I'm trying to think of all of the.
Well, the whole racial issue. No. The Porter. I was about to go there too. Yeah. I mean,
Norman Lear was a liberal in his philosophy as just another person walking the street, but he understood you needed to have conflict to have an interesting show. He did. And he made sure, you know, Gloria, his Archie's daughter, married a raging liberal, as in Mike Stivic, played by Rob Reiner. And he and Archie were oil and water, and that made that show work, their conflicts. Because if Archie was on one side of an argument, Mike was on the other side, and that's where the conflict arose.
Because I remember back when All the Family was hot, Bob Grant from Talk Radio was just getting started in New York City. And Bob invariably, you know, would talk about All the Family and of course would take Archie's side on most issues. And I often wondered
you know, to the extent to which Bob would have been as successful as he was to start. He was brilliant in his own way without all the family to use as a foil.
Well, I am sure a lot of upfront, I mean, people that had a radio microphone in front of them or a TV camera in front of them. A lot of these people were able to use On the Family as a launching point for their perspectives, whether they agreed or disagreed with what that show was doing. A lot of people did. And again, conflicts arose from that show and spilled over into our everyday life.
I one more thing about Norman and I'll drop it, but I read a tribute of him by a conservative columnist. And one of the things that the conservative columnist said was, even though that the two of them disagreed on almost everything, that Norman had a gift of sort of understanding the other side, the other person's point of view, and, you know, even empathizing with it sometimes.
Yes, he did.
You know, from his, you know, which for, from the, you know, which was unusual. It's certainly more unusual now than it might have been then.
He made conservative Archie lovable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key. Archie was embraceable by the American public, whether you agreed with him or disagreed with him. You appreciated his existence as that character every Tuesday night or whatever night you watched it.
Saturday night.
Ran on network. It was originally a Tuesday night show.
So I want to go back to something I think, Bob, you were moving to, which is the question, could such a show exist now? And you were sort of talking about a show that I've never heard of before because I don't follow TV very much. But, you know, are there equivalent shows now? I mean, and I guess what I'm thinking is that, you know, network TV was so much more ubiquitous back then. More people watched it. And now we're sort of segmented in, you know, to various media, communities, as it were. And I just wondered, like, On the Family would work now as well.
You had three networks.
Right.
ABC, NBC, CBS, and a fourth network with PBS for the educational shows. Then, 1968, when All in the Family debuted. Now, 2024.
I thought it was 71.
I'm sorry, say it again?
71, it debuted, All in the Family, I thought.
I think 72. it was in the 60s, 68, 69. Well, okay, let's agree to disagree, because that doesn't affect my point. My point is now, in 2024, you've got dozens of TV networks, dozens of them. And those TV networks are as diversified as you can make it. You've got a niche. Let's say you like Westerns. There are several channels that do nothing but show Westerns. Let's say you're a fan of Private Eye shows. You've got several channels that show nothing but Private Eye shows. Let's say you love cartoons. You've got several channels that show nothing but cartoons. And things are now so spread out, diversified, and individualistic that the people that own and run these cable outlets want to know what show would appeal to Bob Branco. And they will see if they can find a show that will appeal to you, Bob. What show would appeal to Morgan White Jr.? They will see if they can find a show that would appeal to Morgan White Jr. That's what they are doing now. In those days, in the late 60s into the early 70s, All in the Family was starting to branch away from the traditional, quote-unquote, sitcom. Lucy's working in a candy factory, and they speed up the conveyor. And she and Ethel have to try and match the speed of the conveyor, shooting candy down the line. Oh, boy, that's fun. Let's laugh and enjoy ourselves. That show necessarily wouldn't hold everyone's attention today in 2024. Or let me say this. Plots like that style of writing would not work in these days.
But I guess my question is, what style of writing would is working to sort of cut across these various niches? You know, I remember when I was growing up, you know, folks kept saying to me, I never particularly enjoyed television as a blind guy. And people would say, well, you need to have some sense of what's going on so you can talk to your friends about it, which I understood at the time. I rebelled right. against, but it made a lot of sense. Today, it seems a different world. I mean, there's no, you know, I now have 11-year-old grand twins and their sort of interests and what they watch, not on TV, obviously, they watch stuff online, is even different from their closest friend who watched something very different. Even though they're in the same class and, you know, in the same school, in the same community. And it's a different space. I guess my question is, what kind of writing crosses those various spaces?
You've got to come up with strong, interesting 3 or 4 characters that will be the leads in your show, and then come up with supporting characters that will help move a plot along. Let's pick a show, The Big Bang Theory. That show ran for 12 years. You had the core of the 4 guys, 4 nerdy guys, and one who was like a super nerd, Sheldon, his roommate, Leonard, Raj, and Howard. As that show went along, you had 4 guys. The writers slowly but surely decided to add girlfriends for each of them. And by the end of the show, 12 years later, each of them had a significant woman in their life. You've got to understand when you're writing for these shows, how to add, it's like making a cake. How to add the right amount of flour, the right amount of sugar, the right amount of frosting, etc., to make a perfect cake. To be on TV, primetime network TV for 12 years is a major success story. A lot of shows get to last 2-3 years. Some shows extend upon that 4, 5, 6 years. They want to get 4, 5, 6 years so they can live in syndication, so they can be sold to smaller stations across the country, and all that money comes back to the producers and trickles down to the stars and the writers. That's what you want to do. And you've got to try to make a show that has a universal appeal. Like you mentioned, people that are blind, they can't see sight gags. They might respond by hearing an audience laugh and understand something was visually funny, but they can't see it. So you've got to depend on your actors, how they deliver these lines. You've got to depend on the script. The entire 24 minutes, 22, 23, 24 minutes is the length of a TV sitcom. And all these idiosyncrasies that make a show successful or not. And that's the important thing. And I hope I answered your question. I tried to.
No, I think you gave a really good answer. Yeah, I'm just sort of thinking, you know, we're so segmented that it's hard to build that universal show. You know, I'm thinking about the books that are out that do this. And the, you know, the example that comes to mind always is the Harry Potter series, which has this, you know, which has this universal story. But I think it's just harder to do now than it was back then, because we all were watching the same basic media sources, as you said. So it's just a different world.
Well, Harry Potter was so super successful with the elementary age kids, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade. Elementary age, junior high, those books were supremely of interest to that core group. Before the first movie was made, that's what made them make movie number 1, and 6 subsequent movies. And when you go to the theme parks, Disney theme parks, they have a Harry Potter exhibit, and it became a license to print money when you talk about Harry Potter. But the kids' love of those stories, you created a believable fantasy world, and that's the key. It was believable. If you had an open mind and you were in the 6th grade, let me back up. I don't do as many anymore, but I used to do easily 10 bar mitzvahs a year. You're talking 13-year-olds, basically 8th grade, younger brothers and sisters, 5th, 6th, 7th grade. And one of the more popular subjects that I would get bombarded with, oh, Harry Potter, do Harry Potter. We want questions about Harry Potter. I had to read Harry Potter. I had to get familiar with Harry Potter. And I even came up with my own Harry Potter questions that were unique, that you had to know the books, you had to know the characters and interactions to be able to answer the questions. Are any of you guys Harry Potter fans?
Yes.
Not really.
All right. Who said yes?
Peter.
I got a Harry Potter question for you. I'll
try to answer it.
All right. In the world of muggles, this is an original question. I wrote this question. In the world of muggles, this word is a verb. In the world of wizards, this word is a noun. Same word. In the world of wizards, it is a noun. A noun is a person, place, or thing. In the world of muggles, this word is a verb, an action word. Take your time and think about that.
Let's continue the show, and I might, okay. That, and if we think about it, we'll answer at the end of the show.
We can open it up to participants. Now would be a great time to do that. Before we do, okay. I want to send out a hello to Lillia Johnson. She listens to our show faithfully, and she always sends us good, positive comments. Lillian, thank you for listening.
Hello, Lillian.
Okay, so we are on In Perspective. I'm Bob Branco. He's Peter Altschul. Our guest is Morgan White, Jr. Let's open up the program to our listeners. Trish, do we have any hands raised at this particular time?
Let's see. All right. We have Beth. Go ahead, Beth.
All right, Beth.
Hello,
welcome.
Beth.
Welcome.
Okay. The show I was going to ask about, it's not a sitcom, but I like that show, The Good Doctor, because...
I was surprised.
I thought I was the only one that really liked that show, but I'm surprised that it has appeal to a wide range of people.
My wife and I watch it.
And what
it's a very good show.
What do you want to know about the show, or just have a conversation about the show?
Right. Do you think we'll be watching that in 100 years?
I will say yes. You want to know why? That's niche programming. Narrowcasted programming. And there is such availability of those types of shows now. You need to have a place to show those type of shows. Cable. You need to have people like you who enjoy the show. And if there are enough people like you who enjoy the show, they'll keep making more of them. And if they make, let me pick a weird number, 8 seasons worth of shows, that show will live forever.
Well, I enjoy it because three of my grandchildren three of my grandchildren have Asperger's, and it's always nice to see what Sean gets himself into.
Okay, and let me say this. I Love Lucy in its heyday ran for 8 seasons. It had its own spinoff, the Lucy Dizzy Comedy Hour, which ran for 1 season. And a couple of years after it went off the air, Lucy came back with The Lucy Show. And then after 5 seasons, went off the air and came back with Here's Lucy. So she was in front of our eyes on TV for like 24 years straight. But the original I Love Lucy, 8 years. Mm-hmm. And your show, The Good Doctor, is still fresh. It's still generating episodes. So if it gets to 7 or 8 seasons worth, it'll be around forever. Forever and ever.
I know a show that's in syndication right now on a network. I think it's called, I forgot the name of the network at the moment. I'm drawing a blank. And that's the show Emergency with Randolph Mantooth and others.
Well, that was a Jack Webb show.
But that was a 5-year run and it's in syndication still.
It's still on in syndication. You want to get to the magic number of 100 episodes.
Okay.
If you get to 100 episodes, your life in syndication is made for you. The road is paved with your episodes rerunning and rerunning and rerunning. Gilligan's Island.
FETV. FETV. That's the network.
Yeah, FETV. Emergency is on FETV, which stands for Family Entertainment TV. It's also on MeTV, Memorable Entertainment TV. Emergency is also on their station. And usually it's a troika of Dragnet, Adam 12, and Emergency. All three of those were Jack Webb shows. All three of those were shows that had a 5-year run for Emergency. I think an 8-year run for Adam 12, and good grief, the run of Dragnet on TV was 12 seasons. Don't forget it originally started on radio before it even got to TV. So all of those shows, flip the calendar pages to 100 years from now, you'll be seeing Rita Malloy drive around in Adam 12. I promise you.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you very much, Beth.
Beth, thank you for your call.
All right. Tricia, anyone else?
Yes, sir. Ann Chiavetta, go ahead.
Hello, Morgan. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Ann.
Hey, Peter. So I would like to hear you speak about The Simpsons. Specifically, give me your triple play, how long it's been on, what, you know, just, like why it's got such longevity and what how you see it affecting, you know, itself in the future of syndication, stuff like that.
All right, here we go. The Simpsons is the longest running sitcom ever. It's classified as a sitcom, even though it's animated. It's been over 33 years.
Wow.
It was a spinoff from the Tracy Ullman show back in the late 80s. And the fact that The Simpsons has been around for 30 odd seasons, obviously we're never going to run out of episodes. It keeps, how can I say this? Refreshing itself. It's like being on a computer and hitting the refresh button. It keeps refreshing itself. So kids that are now watching it and enjoying it are in the 5th and 6th grade, weren't even born, weren't even thought of when they first started showing Simpsons
episodes. Their parents might have been in the 5th or 6th grade then.
Yeah.
Precisely. Right. And when you have an animated show, for an example, The Flintstones, 1960.
Mm-hmm.
The Flintstones, Alan Reed was the actor that did Fred's voice. Henry Corden, who also did Fred's voice, they used him in the commercials for Fruity Pebbles. When Alan Reed died, they just slipped Henry Corden in to do more Flintstones episodes because they rebranded the Flintstones, Fred and Barney Meet the Shmoo, which was a series.
Oh, yeah.
The new Flintstones, Pebbles was grown up. Earlier we talked about All in the Family. They had Sally Struthers as the voice of teenage Pebbles. So in animation, you can do that. So all the people who do the voices, Dan Castellaneta, if one day he passes on, if they want, I'm sure they can find other people who can do the voice of Homer Simpson. You are just, I mean, go to any elementary school play yard. I guarantee you there's a kid there who can do the voice of Bart Simpson better than Bart Simpson.
And that's a girl, by the way, that does Bart Simpson.
Yeah, it's a woman.
Yes, Nancy Cartwright.
Yep.
That's her name, Nancy Cartwright.
So I am TV illiterate, and I never watched one show of The Simpsons.
Don't.
Having said that, what I find really interesting is that I did listen to a lot of talk radio back then, and that, especially on more conservative talk show hosts, despised that show and did everything they could to make fun of it and to demean it. And I just found that absolutely fascinating that, you know, this was as you said, a cartoon show.
Not necessarily supported, but slapstick humor always has gotten criticized for demonstrating art. Curly, Mo, and Larry are in a prison yard, and Mo and Larry put a rock on top of Curly's head, take a sledgehammer to it to break rocks. You know, the old perceived thing that's what they do in prison. And they're all actors. So Curly knew that they were going to put a prop rock on his head and break it. And Mo and Larry thought it would be funny to lift a real rock. And Curly Moon said, no, 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 that's a real one. They left that in the script. When they show that episode, watch for that. When you see Homer strangling Bart out of anger, a lot of people were not happy that that is what you're seeing, a father attacking his son. They are doing it as slapstick. They, as in the people who produce The Simpsons.
Well, look at the Three Stooges. That was all hitting people and whacking people, and that was acceptable.
And that was all slapstick. S-L-A-P.
Look at Bugs Bunny.
And Bugs Bunny. If there's an anvil handy, somebody's going to have that anvil hit their head. Poor Elmer, poor Yosemite, poor Porky Pig. They were the foil for Bugs and Daffy. And good grief. The coyote should have, if he were a cat, he'd need 993 lives to survive the falls, the explosions, the calamities that befell him that he was trying to put onto the Roadrunner.
Why do you think slapstick endures if so many people, you know, have a, just don't like it?
All right. Your name is Ann, correct?
Yeah.
I want to make sure I get your name right, Ann. A lot of people think it's funny, and I'm almost going to cross a line here. A lot of people think it's funny to see a man hit in his lower extremities, step on the rake, and the rake comes up and whacks it. You laugh at that.
Right.
I don't think it's funny. Every man listening right now has probably suffered an unwanted impact in that area. It is not funny, but you see it happen to somebody else and your first impulse is to laugh. It's wrong, but go back to Charlie Chaplin. I'm trying to think of the earliest visuals that we had. Slapstick has been in front of us for over 100 years on a screen, be it a small screen in our living rooms, or the big screen at the movie theater. Somebody being hit in the face with a pie. Oh, ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. He just got hit in the face with a big green pie. When you think about it, it's not funny, but we respond with laughter at these things. Maybe we shouldn't, but we do.
Because it can happen to somebody else, not us. Right.
Exactly.
But it seems to me, I never found, just for me personally, I'm always speaking for myself, I never found that stuff especially funny, but my sort of weird, warped sense of humor, I get that. But it's not, it's a different kind of laughter, if it makes any sense. It's, you know, it's sort of dark.
No, I understand kind of your laughter. Point when you say that a different kind of laughter. It's not grab your tummy, belly laugh.
But right. It's a nervous
In a way, it's kind of nervous laughter.
Right.
You're laughing.
Phew, glad that didn't happen to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A relief.
That's right.
Or that's a right. relief. Yeah.
Annie, thank you so much.
Sure.
Annie, before you go, I just want to make one more comment because we talk about The Simpsons and thinking about the conversation. And maybe as I said, I'm TV illiterate, but I was, the Simpsons were so despised by some people in the talk show circuitry, as it were, because it was perceived as anti-family and anti-nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, people just grew to hate that show. I mean, every time there was a new scene, it would amount to hours and hours of criticism and how dare they make fun of the nuclear
right.
And on it went. And I don't think the other slapstick that we talked about had that kind of impact. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
You know, when you compare the Three Stooges slapstick to the Simpsons slapstick, yes, the Three Stooges were related, a cousin and brothers, or the Simpsons, the traditional, and I know this isn't fair because obviously I get to see The Simpsons and Peter, you've never seen an episode for the obvious reasons. I see right now Homer, both hands around his son's neck, almost every episode, strangling innocent little Bart who isn't innocent.
Right.
And that's where the complaints came. Homer has yelled at Lisa. I don't think he's ever put his hands on her in anger. Marge tries to hold the family together with sympathy and kindness, but the family dynamic of what a father does to his son is where most of these complaints come from. How dare a father treat his own son that way? But again, it's a TV show. It's a sitcom.
It's also animated. It's fake. Yes. It's a simulation.
So true. A lot of what you see is exaggeration of action.
Mm.
You have to exaggerate in action to sell the point even more than just generally selling the point.
Mm.
And do you agree with what I just said?
I do. And I also, Peter, going back to your question, I don't like the Three Stooges, but I love The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. And I used to be able to watch The Simpsons when I had vision. And I thought it was irreverent to the extreme, but I loved it. I know, that sick sense of humor, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, no, a lot of people loved it. I mean, it was obviously an iconic show.
People still do.
Yeah, exactly.
People didn't love it, it wouldn't be on for three decades and go on strong.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Morgan. I appreciate you talking about this.
In what town or community do you call home?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I am from New York originally, born and raised.
Okay. I've gotten calls from Pittsburgh. If you get a chance, I don't know what you do on Saturday evenings, but I'm on WBZ, which is 10:30 on the AM dial. Our signal comes booming into Pittsburgh. I know that
All
for
right.
a fact.
Yeah, it does.
I'll check it
so
out.
It does.
You listen to me.
Okay.
10 to midnight. Okay.
10 to midnight. All right.
I roll up
You'll
the red
carpet. On your A lady. We'll get it too, obviously.
Yeah, I'm sure you can get BZ on your A lady. I get it on mine, so that shouldn't be difficult.
Yeah.
All right.
And thank you
Ann.
For participating.
Thanks, Morgan.
Yeah.
We have
Ann.
About 5 minutes. So Trish, do we have any other hands raised?
We do have one hand, Deanna.
Okay. Jen?
Hey, hi.
Hi.
I watched television when I had vision when I was little.
Okay.
I didn't much for a while, but when I was raising my own kids, they had sight, so television was on a lot. And one of the shows I really liked didn't make your cut. It only had 62 episodes, and it was only a 4-year program. But I was trying to think about why I probably liked it and why my kids thought it was funny. And what it's show? It's a mixture of what you've been talking about. It was dinosaurs.
Oh, yes. The Sinclair family.
Yes. And so you saw, you know, the baby abusing his father. And that's slapstick.
What did the baby call his father?
Not the mama.
Not the mama. Which I thought was a great name. A young baby has a mother and a father. He's closer to the mother, and he knows this guy is in the house as well. He's not the mama. Yeah.
And so I think that that's probably one of the elements that made me laugh, because I thought that in many ways my children were much closer to me than their dad.
Do you know why they chose the name Sinclair for the family's last name? It was a statement. It was well closeted, layer after layer of tongue in cheek. You've got these dinosaurs in the era of dinosaurs. And where do we get our oil from?
I see.
Our oil comes from the fossilization of dinosaurs over millions of years. And there was a company that had gasoline stations on every other corner called Sinclair.
Wow.
That was a tongue-in-cheek tip of the hat to oil companies.
Amazing. Yeah.
And Sinclair, being the name of the family of dinosaurs, was their way of saying, hey, if we don't pay attention to these things, we're doomed to fail our entire society.
Yeah.
And that's why they called that family the Sinclair family.
That's an interesting piece of trivia. I think one of the things that appealed to me too was there were a lot of liberal thoughts in there. Like, one of my favorite episodes was Nuts to War. I grew up during the Vietnam War era.
As did I.
Yeah, and saw my friends being sent off to a war that they didn't really understand what was going on. Their parents were all gung-ho because, you know, John Wayne. Even if they were slightly too young to have been part of World War II, they had this romantic vision of war and, you know, the draft was okay by them because it's your duty to serve your country.
The and parents of the kids in the 60s.
Yeah.
We have about 30 seconds.
Okay. They were kids' ages during World War II and maybe as well extending to World War I. They figured America always comes out on top of a war. You best serve our country. And that was their perspective.
Exactly. Thank you, Deanna. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Deanna. Everybody. We're out of time. Morgan, it was a pleasure. You're always a wealth of knowledge. We'd like to have you come back at some point.
And
by
the way,
other venues that I want to talk to you about off the air that you can come on as well.
All right. The answer to the trivia question is snitch. That's the ball, the game of Quidditch, the snitch. And when you snitch on your younger brother or sister that they broke the lamp.
Oh, wow.
That's my answer.
Very good. I had a different answer, but your answer is better than mine.
Thank you, everybody.
Well, thank you for having me. I'd love to come back.
All right, Morgan. We'll talk about that for sure. Next Friday, we're going to have Janet Labreck from Synergy Design Consultants. I will send you some information about that to pass around. I need to get a bio. She's a disability advocate, pretty much. She just has a consulting business to do all that with. Thank you, everyone. Go safe with God's abundant blessings, and talk to you soon.